Welcome to the Finance Path Podcast, where we discuss all your burning questions relating to money, property, and investment for every stage of life. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Attard and Chris Collard.
Hey, listeners, Mark Attard here. And guess what? She's back. I'm joined by the ever popular Jackie Whiteford, business coach extraordinaire. How are you, Jackie?
I'm really well, thank you. Really, really well.
Jackie, today we are talking about money and in particular the art of happiness. Now, listeners may be thinking, what has that got to do with money or property? Our title of our podcast is Money, Property and You. And I'd say, well, it actually has got a little bit to do with money and property, but primarily it's got to do with you. Today is about the you part. But as I said, when we really think about it, most people, I know most of our clients don't invest in property or look to create some wealth through their businesses, et cetera. But in particular, property, just because they love weatherboards or bricks or ovens, et cetera, they invest to get a financial return that ultimately they believe will provide them with some financial independence and from that a degree of satisfaction or security and ultimately some happiness. So over to you, Jackie. My first question is, what is the art of happiness formula and where does it stem from?
Okay, so coaching with my clients, a lot of them would say to me, I just want to be happy. You know, I've got this and I've got all the pretty picture and, you know, the Australian dream, but I'm just not happy. So I went on the quest to find out some solutions of that, and after research came across the scientific formula for happiness. So some scientists were commissioned to study a group of people over a few years to come up with the science behind happiness. So that's where the scientific formula for happiness came. A team of scientists came up with it after studying many people for many years. So the formula, it sort of doesn't mean much when I read it out. It's H equals S plus C plus V.
Hold up. I fail chemistry.
When I read it out, it doesn't mean anything. And for the listeners, I will supply a little sheet on this and explain what the formula is and the percentages, because I will talk about those as well. So there'll be a download, which I'm sure you can
great
at the website for your listeners.
And I can take an hour to try and work my way through it and understand what on earth you're on about, yeah?
Download the piece of paper and it'll be quite simple and it'll explain to you what the formula is and how it's broken down to what those components mean and the percentages of it as well.
Okay, so give us those letters again. So how do we start?
So H, which is happiness, okay, equals S plus C plus V.
Give me S.
Yes, so S is your cellular set point. So this is pretty much your genetics.
So if I've got a miserable mum and dad, I'm in trouble.
Not necessarily. We all have an average set point of where our happiness is, and it's different between people. So our genetics and, you know, our upbringing can have a little bit of an impact on us. Can we dramatically change our cellular set point? I don't believe we can. I believe fine. A little bit like I say, when you blow up a balloon and you let it shrink down, it never quite goes to where it was. So we've all blown up balloons and, you know, they're down and they're that little bit stretched. So I believe you can stretch and modify your cellular set point. Because what we need to understand is that happiness isn't a measurable thing such as money. You know, you can measure how many dollars do you have in the bank. It's quite an easy measure.
Yeah.
Where happiness isn't. You can't have a day that's extreme some of this happiness and put it in my back pocket for later. So it's sort of like a daily thing that you need to work on as such, or need to be mindful probably a better word of it.
So different things. So what would make you happier on one particular day wouldn't be enough to move you or float your boat on another per se.
Well, it could. It's just that we can't save happiness from one day and use it on another. You know, like you make a cake, you have a slice today, you have a slice tomorrow.
Mm.
You can't do that with happiness, because happiness is all about the present.
Cake makes me happy. Oh, here we go. Jackie White. Now, Jackie White for Health Extraordinaire is going to tell me to stop putting down the cake. You're probably right.
No, I believe everything in moderation.
Cool. So S is our cellular set point, and it, ultimately what you're telling me there is it's got a fair bit to do with our genetics, and it's primarily fixed, but it can be stretched a little bit one way or the other, yeah?
Yeah. So the majority, to how to increase our set point, the majority of time it just needs to be spent feeling the feelings of what you want through, going to meditation, visualization, and even breathing. You and I have spoken about breathing before.
It's pretty important.
We need to go to that mindful state and be aware of who we are. It keeps sort of coming back to similar themes, the talks that I do. It's about knowing who you are as well and knowing, what's good for you and what's not. So pushing your boundary limits. And when I say pushing your boundary limits, it's if when you go to experience something and you really feel like, whoa, I've never done this before. Like little bits of fear kick in, a little bit of anxiety or whatever it might be, whatever that you choose to feel at that time. If you stretch beyond that, that's when you grow as a person. The time, we can recall times that we've pushed through. And often we use, if people speaking in front of a group, because public speaking is one of the biggest fears when they look at the statistics of it. I think 97% of people fear public speaking.
Okay.
If you go and speak in front of two people and then four people. So if you keep putting your limits and stretching your boundaries, then you can raise your cellular point. And it's around perception. So we all have a semi-fixed place of happiness, on the spectrum. So when happier people look for, I mentioned this before in the money mindset, is that happy people look for opportunities where unhappy people look for problems.
Yep.
So, the mindset and your happiness, it's all interlinked, so to speak. So the set point for happiness can be upregulated and shifted to greater happiness through self-reflection and having beliefs that are going to serve you.
Okay, so it sounds like, again, as you've mentioned in previous podcasts, there's a bit of time that someone has to invest in themselves, yeah?
Well, yes, and how much time do we invest in everything else? I mean, what hours do we sleep a day? What hours do we work? And really the time that you need to invest in yourself, when you look at it, even if you invested 10 minutes a day, aren't we worth it?
No, I knew if I threw that question over to you, Miss Whiteford, that would get you going. Yep. Because you're sitting there going, mate, yeah, you do need to, and it shouldn't be that hard to find that time. I can see it.
Yeah.
But I think that's a challenge. I genuinely think that that's a bit of a challenge, like for a lot of people. I will even talk on my own behalf and those that are bringing up families. You're finding time for yourself and then spending time, that time working on yourself, whether it's being more self-aware of what makes you happy, et cetera, et cetera, is a real challenge, I think, for a lot of people.
It can be, and I like to reframe, and as you know, I speak about reframing stuff.
And language being really important, and I've just used some language that you don't like, so go reframe it.
Yeah, you can see the hair stick up on the back of my neck going, well, we might have to modify that language.
Mm.
The word challenge is great for some people because some people thrive on a challenge, where some people don't like the word challenge at all, can't handle it. And this comes down to even, understanding who you are. So, whether you go and get some different profiling of behaviour and personalities done so you can really understanding you as a core. But if we say that having time for ourselves is a challenge, it's too hard, and insert all these negativities around it, we're not going to strive for that. We're not ever going to achieve it. One of the main things I coach, and I do tend to find that it's more with women than men, just from my personal experience and the clients that I've spoken to, is that the more you say yes to yourself, the more you say yes to other people. And what I mean by that is often, especially men, will do everything for everybody else, but they won't attend to their own needs. So they make sure the kids have everything they want and they will go without, to the extent of they don't even eat well, they won't exercise, they won't look after themselves. But fundamentally, that's the engine of the family. So why are you, you know, they're looking after the kids and whatever else, and it can go for a man as well.
But they're starving the engine, yeah.
Yeah, they're the engine. So really, you've got to have the engine serviced. We service our air conditioners, we service our cars, we service, you know, everything. You might get, if you have a pool, you know, whatever it is, you service everything in life, yet we don't look after ourselves. Are we eating healthy? Are we drinking enough water? Are we looking after ourselves? And are we saying yes to ourselves?
Okay.
Definitely not.
Okay. So we've got S in the formula down pat. Our cellular...
your S.
Now we've got C.
So this for me was a big wow when I started studying this. I think it was in the last year or whenever it was that I came across this specific formula. The conditions of living is 10% of our happiness. Which
10%?
Wow, that's not a lot.
Yeah.
At all. And I know from experience, every time we set, and even in my corporate financial world, plans that we would set on a, you know, quarterly and 12-monthly basis and even break it down on a weekly basis was all around external factors, our conditions of living. We never once wrote plans around what we wanted, or I want this amount of money and I want this, and it was all very much the conditions of living, which is our external. And we're focusing on our external environment. I would almost put it out there and say potentially up to, I don't know, 90% of our efforts are focused on our external environment.
So can you give some specific examples of, that external? What are they?
Yeah, what we wear, the brands, the cars we drive, the houses we live in, you know, buying things, the food, the abundance of food, the abundance of alcohol, things like that that are our external environment. They're quick fixes. So we're going through them. You know, shopaholics, you get a quick fix, could be for a few minutes or a few days, and then you'll actually slump back down to exactly where you were because it's a Band-Aid effect.
Okay, so it's 10%. Yeah. So what we're saying there is a lot of people are chasing and focusing on something that at the end of the day, 10%.
Yeah, it doesn't. Based on these sort of percentages on this scientific formula, yes.
Okay.
And then that rolls very nicely into money, because we're here sort of talking around money and the art of happiness, is that we put ourselves under financial pressure to have all these external things to make us feel better when ultimately it doesn't.
So when I'm working 70 hours a week so that I can go and provide for my family a whole range of things that at the end of the day they probably don't really care that much for, that's the 10% you're talking about there.
Yeah, and when we talk about providing for our family, we need to really understand what providing and what, you know, we almost need to get back to basics. We have too much stuff. Mm. And I use the word stuff deliberately then, although it's a word that, you know, isn't quite, it's probably not very sophisticated. But I specifically use it because we do have too much stuff and people get overwhelmed with stuff. You know, walk into houses, and I'm to blame here as well. Like I said to my children, we need to clean up your toys before, you know, Christmas, before any more toys will come to the house.
Oh.
Some to charity. Let's go through your clothes because, you know, let's get rid of things because the choices that they have are overwhelming for them, and children get overwhelmed. They don't need this amount of choices. They don't have the brain capacity to make them. So when you're looking even at, you know, what we're doing to our kids by giving them too much choice, we're almost teaching them how to do anxiety and overwhelm at a young age.
Yeah. don't come into the playroom at our joint. Like, seriously, it's, it's all bad. Like, there's lots of stuff. So 10% focused on externalities, or that's not even a word, but we'll keep going. So 10%, what are the other percentages?
So the 40% we've got left, so 50% is your genetics and your cellular point,
yep.
Which, as I said, can be modified.
Yep.
That's really by, you know, self-reflection and sort of getting to understand who you really are and what you're about, your, you know, big why, if you want to call it that.
Yep.
is the 10%, which is your external, your condition of living. And we talk about our voluntary actions, which is the remainder 40%. So your voluntary actions are actions that you do on a daily basis, ones that you choose to do and make them your habit.
Can you give us an example?
An example would be we are, well, there's a study saying that we have our thought processes. It can be anything from like about 12,000 up to 60,000, and some studies say even more. So that's up to 60,000 thoughts per day.
Mm.
My thought around that is like, ouch, you know, there's another thought just thinking about it.
Mm.
So what does that mean? Means that we have so many thoughts a day, and majority of them are negative, and the majority of them are reoccurring. So one of the first things I often will say to people is, what are you saying to yourself when you wake up in the morning when you wake up? What's the first thing that you say to yourself? If you want to start your day off bad, then just speak bad to yourself. If you want to start your day off well, if you want to have a good day, it can be determined by how you start and how you speak to yourself in the morning.
What do you say?
Grumpily get out of bed. Me? Depends on the morning, I think. I don't have a same thing every day, but I'm generally, you know, today's going to be today because I'm often experiencing new things every day. You know, so I go, what am I looking for today? Or I even reflect back on, yesterday was a great day. What did I achieve that I hadn't done before? Or whatever it might be. So I think being grateful.
But the language is always positive, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I'm human too.
Yeah, you have shit days. You have shit days as well, yep.
I do. And sometimes, and then I'll just say, you know, I'm not having a good day today. You know, usually IT and stuff like that is where my, yep. You know, those sort of things happen. But generally, yeah, it's what are we going to do today? And we have a saying in our house as well for a little 4 and a 10-year-old. And if they come out and, you know, the saying is, did you get out of the wrong side of bed today?
Mm.
Yeah. Well, we don't have that type of saying in our house. We sort of say, righto, are you all in? So automatically the kids will go, ninja, because, you know, when you see your response, and even me, I think, oh, ninja's power and karate and, yep. You know, that type of thing. So it's more of a happier experience because we tend to visualise it and then feel it.
Yep.
So you can state at any time. So we use little techniques like that for our kids.
So what was, you know, that? So that was ninja, and what was the other one?
Are you a ninja or are you a ninja?
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Things like that. Or even we'll even ask the kids if something comes up, are we happy or are we sad?
So do the listeners have to come up with other ones that rhyme, or is that just something that the Whitefords are good at?
I don't. My husband's come up with those, actually.
Okay.
Which will probably, you know, be horrified that I said that. And, yeah, are you happy or are you sad? Because that's making the kids aware. And my husband will even say it to me sometimes, have you had a good day or a bad day? Come on now. You know, what have you achieved today? You know, so we'll do this to each other. So when we see each other potentially not in the best spot, I guess,
yep.
You'd say.
Yeah.
So even little things like that, just play little games, you know, little things like that. Because are you happy or are you sad? It's a choice.
Yeah, and just lift the heaviness, because I think it's one of the things that I think I do it all the time as well too. When you ask somebody, how are you going? If you haven't seen them for a while, how are you doing? And they're going, yeah, no, I'm going okay. Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Rarely do you ever hear someone turn around and knock your socks off with saying, yeah, no, I'm great, doing really well. This is going for me. That's going for me. It doesn't happen too often. It's normally, yeah, no, I'm okay. I'm all right.
Specifically have changed for me. And you listen to people, they'll say, yeah, nah, like yes, no, in the Aussie language.
Yeah, nah.
What does that mean? That just negates it. Like you've actually said nothing to me.
Jackie, it means yeah, nah.
What does that mean? And people used to say, oh, how are you going? Yeah, I'm good. And I'll often say, you know what? No, I'm not good. I'm better than good. And people look at you and go, no, I'm better than good. I'm having a great day. I'm having a fantastic day. How's your day? And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, yeah, it's been pretty good, actually, or, you know, it hasn't because of an event or whatever it is.
Hmm.
You'll find people will follow you. They might get a bit like, oh, what's going on here, Mark?
We've got a live one here. Like, steer clear. All right, so we've got that formula. We've got the formula and we've got 50%, 10% and 40%. And I'm good enough to at least work out that comes to
100%. Yes.
Great.
On the money, 100%.
So can I ask you, when we're talking about money and happiness, what are some of the most common misconceptions around money and happiness?
There's the good old argument is money doesn't buy happiness, and it doesn't. Money can assist you and give you choices. Money can potentially give you more freedom because you have more choices. It doesn't buy you happiness, though.
Is that because...
So you can have more money and you can have more choices, and that can actually create more confusion.
Yeah, oh, look, we see that. We see it all the time. And I get it. Like, if I say that to somebody or if I mention that to a client that doesn't have money, they'll turn around and go, oh, yeah, okay, well, that's fine. That's easy for you. It's easy for someone with money to say. And I get where they're coming from. But I do come back to that that thought or that concept around your purpose and your why. And I would say, well, money can't necessarily give you a purpose. And if you've got a purpose in life, and that sounds a little bit, it can sound a little bit wanky, especially coming from someone like me, but I legitimately mean it because I see it. If plenty of wealthy people that at the end of the day, they might have, as you've mentioned before, the great house and the picket fence, etc. But they're ultimately not necessarily that happy because they're still searching for something or what, you know, whatever their why may be or what their greater purpose is.
Saying which I love is success isn't happiness, happiness is success.
Yeah, it's a good one. Haven't heard that before. Did you make that up yourself?
No. I got it off somewhere. I read it somewhere and I went, oh, I love that. I'm going to pinch that. Yeah. And I often put that in my slides in my presentations.
Oh, I'd just be claiming it. That's what I do.
Yeah, okay, that's mine.
Yeah, okay. So, you
know, yeah, I don't know who actually owns that. But yeah, success isn't happiness. Excuse me. Happiness is success. So we need to focus more on that and what makes us happy and the whole why behind it than the dollars. Because the dollars is just purely a means to an end. And yes, it is easy for someone that has more money to say that to someone that doesn't have more money. Yet I've witnessed, and I'm sure I'll witness over and over again with the diversity of clients that I've dealt with over the, you know, I've been sales for over 30 years and 25 years in pretty much 25 years in the financial area, that the people that I see happy aren't necessarily always the ones that have got money in the bank.
I don't disagree with you there, but let me ask you this though: is that the minority that we're pinning our belief on there? We turn around and say, "Well, oh, Mark, yeah, that's fine. You've got a couple of clients that have got a truckload of cash, but they're not happy." But if I was to line 10 of them up, 8 of them would be pretty happy, and only 2 wouldn't be. Like, are we searching for that minority there to prove a point?
Great question. I mean, without having a conversation with them, I wouldn't know whether they're happy or not. There's a lot of pretense out there that people are pretending. So I'd love to have conversations with them to find out whether they're real.
Mm.
Well, some of the words I love are real and raw.
Mm.
And, you know, and I think we've lost the concept of being real and raw of who we are. And I know we've talked about this, finding out who you are. So when it comes to when it comes to money and happiness, you need to understand what that means for you and stop comparing, because where unhappiness is created is when you're comparing it against somebody else. We can't compare ourselves against anyone else. No one else has the same thumbprint as us. No one else is identical to us. Even identical twins aren't the same.
Understand. So yeah,
we have to stop comparing. We have to start being grateful for what we have and living in a mind of, and people might say, oh, yeah, that's, you know, wishy-washy and it's great for you to say. And, you know, I've had experiences in my life where I've pretty much had nothing. I've been in debt and had no money because of situations I've chosen to leave. So I know what it's like to have money and walk away from it, and I know what it's like to not have money and have to build yourself back up again. So I've been through that whole roller coaster.
And what part of the roller coaster did you enjoy the most?
The most that was more rewarding is the word I'd use, is when I was pushing myself back up, you know, back up the financial green and getting myself back on track. So, because I could see how I was growing, I could see how I was developing. And as a human, it was giving me so much self-satisfaction that I was doing this stuff and being who I needed to be to get there. So out of my whole, you know, my whole journey of life, and I've still got a lot to go, touch wood, is the times that I really pushed myself. And looking back now, that's what made me who I am now.
And sometimes that's only, though, correct me if I'm wrong, upon reflection that you get necessarily that insight. Because I think about that as well too, and I go, look, if I think about some of the times in my life, like if I look at my overseas trip when I was 21 years of age, which is what, nearly 20 years ago now, and I remember distinctly being lost in the middle of Spain with no idea how to get to where we were supposed to be staying. And I'll be honest, I was with a mate and we were genuinely scared. Like, we didn't know how to get to where we needed to get to. No one was interested in speaking to two blokes in English that clearly looked like they weren't from Spain. But when I look upon, we eventually found the joint, but when I look back on some of the best experiences are the ones that I look on most fondly, that always keeps coming back to me, as opposed to some of the, you know, cracking nights that we had in the various pubs and nightclubs around the way.
Yeah, it's the character building. Yeah. It's building your character. It's building you and who you are.
Makes
what you're, you know, like if we bring it back to your happiness and your money, it makes your beliefs around who you are. So it's writing your blueprint of who you are.
So if we were, well, often we say to our clients, we talk about, they'll come to us and we talk about accountability sometimes, we talk about clarity about where they are, et cetera, and all with a view to helping them feel, I suppose, a bit more empowered when it comes to their money. If we're talking more broadly about happiness or linking it back to money, how do I, as one of the listeners listening to you today, you know, take control and feel more empowered about my life, my financial situation?
The only way to really get empowered, from my beliefs and what I've seen, is understand who you are and own who you are.
We keep coming back to that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And then you need to reflect on that. And it's not always about what am I going to be doing? What do I need to do to get to where I need to go? Sometimes it's what am I going to stop doing and what am I going to stop tolerating to get to where I need to go?
Mm.
Which is a different conversation.
Sounds like a pretty deep one too.
Well, we tend to put up with stuff in our life that isn't what we want. So if we have if we say something to someone and it's a bit harsh, we sort of feel an incongruency with ourselves and we think, oh, I probably shouldn't have behaved like that or acted like that or said that. So that's going against our values and our beliefs and what our standards are. So if we know why we have our standards and our values and our beliefs and we live to them, then our life is going to be so much more happier because we're going to take action. We're not going to tolerate people speaking to us or doing or whatever it might be. Or if we believe that we need to live in a nicer house, then we're not going to tolerate living in that house that we're in. We're going to take action to earn more money or put in a different strategy so we can get to that next place. So it's all tying back to, you know, who you are, know who you are, why do you want this, and then taking action around it. You know, a lot of my workshops I work on three. What are three things you're going to stop tolerating and start doing? Get attached to those three things. What are three things that you're going to start noticing because of that action or because you're not doing that anymore?
Is there some common answers that you can share with our listeners that you see written down or hear that get shared?
In relation to happiness and money, to tie them in, because I sort of do it separately when I do it with clients, is really having the big picture in mind and understanding what you do. A lot of people forget, like if we're talking around money, that coffee a day is only like $5. Well, that is that. They don't really take ownership and understand what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. So they need to become really self-aware of what they're doing, why they're doing it, and does that relate back to their bigger picture? So if they want to go on a holiday every year, most people could do it. Mm. They say, I'm afford it, like an overseas holiday or whatever. I can't afford it. And some generally don't have a lot of money at the end of the week to save. They generally don't. The ones that do waste it. So they're not tying it into, you know, they're not valuing who they are and who their money is, or valuing that time away with the family or their mates to go on that holiday. So it comes back to valuing your money and who you are. So that's how I would tie your money and your mindset back in, is understanding the value of them both.
Yeah, okay. If you were to, okay, so we've covered the formula off there at the start. If I was to say to you, how would you summarize the art of happiness for our listeners? If we wanted to wrap it up, what's the takeaway for them when explaining or understanding the art of happiness?
Okay, to summarize it, I'll sort of summarize a little bit with a quick little story. A woman that I know that is a businesswoman, husband works, two kids, pretty much general type situation, and you know, husband, wife, two kids type scenario.
Yeah.
Had a beautiful home, new car, had all the material assets that you would want. So they were living the Aussie dream, yet they couldn't afford the Aussie dream that they were living. So
the 10%, the externals you're talking about, yeah?
Yeah, they had the home. So they, you know, they were all focused on the material assets. They wanted this big 5-bedroom home. They had two kids.
I'm so proud of myself right now for remembering the first part of the formula.
Yes.
Yeah, well, cool. So they got all of that. Yep.
Yeah, so they had this beautiful brand new 5-bedroom home. They've got husband and wife and two kids. They don't even need the other rooms. So they were living outside their means, and they were stretched. They were finding second jobs on weekends, so they weren't even having family time, which started creating more cracks. So were they under financial pressure? Yes. Was the relationship under pressure? Yes. Were they behaving appropriately? No. They started, there was a little bit more, I'll call it substance abuse, and I mean they started drinking more. So, you know, they'll have a glass of wine to numb their pain at night, which created, which didn't necessarily stop at a glass.
Yep.
And then there was food. They started putting on weight and becoming unhealthy because they were trying to numb the pain of what they're in the financial pressure. Someone suggested to them, they went and got advice, and basically until a few people had said to them, hey, you're living above your means, really, you can either wait and wait, just watch it fall apart, you know, a slow, painful death, so to speak, or you can actually control this situation right now. So they decided to take control of the situation, and they sold their home and they downsized. They they still have a small mortgage now, but to what they had is nothing. They're living, they're going on overseas holidays, and they're having a beautiful life. They are so less stressed. You look at them and they look like different people. They have, you know, you look at some people and they think, oh my goodness, you've aged. These have done the reverse. And they're doing beautiful things now as a family, and they've found the reason, you know, why they got married, the two got married in the first place. And they're back into a, you know, a beautiful spot now because they realised, they took control of the situation. They actually downsized and realised, well, the house wasn't making them happy. If anything, it was about to break them all apart and be another statistic of Australia of divorced couples.
Yeah, and so in summarizing it,
that's a good reflection of things, you know, of what happens when you don't sort of listen to the financial pressures. So it comes back in a quick summary is know your standards of who you are, know your beliefs and where they come from, understand what drives you, you know, again, the purpose, your why, whatever you want to, you know, for what outcome, whatever word resonates with you, use that word. So understand what drives you and then focus on what really matters.
Yeah, great.
I've known some people that have spent, you know, 10 years trying to have children and they've put them in childcare and gone off to work and not had time with them. And I'm not saying that's wrong. It's not what I would choose. I'm just saying focus on what it is. If you're going to put so much energy into having this, this and this, focus on what's important. And what, you know, whatever that means. I have my kids in childcare as well, so I'm not. That's not a reflection on anyone. So please don't take that as judgment.
Understand?
Or anything.
Yeah.
The point was, the point I was trying to make is whatever you put your energy into, you know, focus on what is important.
And I think that just as a question in itself is just possibly a question that not enough of us. Ask ourselves often enough, like, what is important to us and what is actually going to make us happy instead of,
what we want.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We're often told what we don't want, and we tell everyone, oh, I don't want this, I don't want this, don't do this. How often do we walk around and, so what do you want out of life? What do you want out of business? What do you want out of a relationship? What do you want out of your family? What do you want? It's not conversations we have. That is such an empowering conversation. For if two people were having that conversation, is more empowering because you're actually tapping into, you know, your heart space and starting to feel around things as opposed to just being a bit more mechanical and just doing things, which sort of sums up in my, I have a little bit of a saying and it goes, know your life, own your life, live your life, take action so you love your life.
Wow, that's impressive. It's long, it's impressive. I'm not going to be able to recite all of that. But for our listeners, like that, and obviously they can listen to this podcast over and over again. Is there anything you've been really generous with your collateral, or for want of a better word, or your insights and your knowledge with some of the documents and resources that you've provided us before? Is there anything that you can leave our listeners with to take away?
In relation to
art of in relation to the art of happiness, yeah. I'll put you on the spot there.
Yeah. Oh look, I could talk an hour on that.
Is there any when you do your discussions, when you do your discussions, etc., is there any exercises that you get people to go through to help them start to identify what is their purpose or possibly what makes them happy that we could share with them? And if not, that's cool, but I just thought it might be an opportunity.
Well, that's quite a loaded question in the sense that there's probably more than one step that I go through. And, you know, it's understanding your mindset and why you do things, which is first. And it all comes back to understanding the bigger picture, understanding who you are, why you're doing things, because then you'll find you'll be more productive and less busy. You'll find you'll have more time on your hands. So it's a fantastic thing for time management.
So it just clears out all the clutter.
Yeah, just we like to be busy, and it's almost a badge of honour when we're busy.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and we get tied up and running our own businesses. You know, I'm guilty of that too, and then something will happen and you'll have to stop and reflect and think, oh, I don't need to be doing all of that stuff anyway. I just need to be doing what, you know, what you need to be done. So it's around getting clear, and if it means writing lists every day to remember to, you know, drink your water, eat healthy, go for a walk, have a, you know, be aware of your breath, be aware of you know, what you think around your money, be aware of your financial position. It's expanding your awareness around where you currently are.
Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this. Like, if at some point through this podcast you've sat there and gone, hang on a minute, money, property and you, where is this all going? Don't worry, rest assured, I'm doing the podcast, and sometimes I'm thinking I'm talking to someone here that is on about stuff that I don't totally follow. But I think it's really, really important. I think it's the I suppose the starting point of a lot of the discussions that we have with our clients, and I encourage our consultants, our credit advisors, to continue to have with the people that are sitting in front of them, because ultimately a lot of people, I know from our business's perspective, they come in and they're out about taking out some debt, and I think it's incumbent upon us to ask a few deeper questions around why they're looking to do it. What they're hoping to get out of it, and ensuring that they, I suppose, have an eye on the end game at the start. I know that through business and my experience in business, a lot of the business mentors that we've spoken to before talk about one of the most important things in business is understanding your exit and planning your exit from the start, so knowing your end game. So, guys, I hope you've enjoyed the series of podcasts. If you haven't heard the other ones that we've done with Jackie, I encourage you to listen to those as well too. And hopefully if you can just get one thing out of it that helps you take a little bit more control over your finances and your money, then it's a job well done. So thank you again, Jackie. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Mark. Loved it.
Cheers.
For more information about this podcast or to ask a burning question, visit www.financepath.com.au/podcasts.